The gurus of how to join me now, Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York, USA. And they visit us once a month to talk about home repair and related matters and take your calls. And they also have a little quiz that we throw out as part of the whole mix. I covered everything?
Yes. The quiz, when people recognize us occasionally, they said, that's a great idea. You know, they almost are related to Jeopardy a little bit, you know.
Except quiz. We want answers. We don't want questions.
That's right.
We want questions from the other callers.
Yes.
And by the way, the number here is 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. Or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And we're already getting comments, which we'll get to in a little bit. Is there anything that I should be leading you into for today's discussion before get to the quiz?
Well, I think now is the time to actually definitely, absolutely deal with air conditioning as far as winterizing them for the upcoming season, as far as taking them out of the windows.
It's heavy.
I know, but the heaviness, I've never really seen a study or anything, but the amount of heat energy that's wasted when you are actually paying for the heat directly versus the cost of paying someone to remove that air conditioner, because it's basically having an open window and heat is just flying out of your building, especially if it's a one or two family home. And even if it is a co-op or a condo or a rental, it would just keep the overall cost down in the building and just be a little greener and a little bit more efficient. And as far as central units, you know, I'm not a big person about wrapping them up, but I do agree with putting something on the top to keep the debris out of the top of the unit. And other than that, and if it's a in-the-wall unit, maybe put a blanket or some kind of insulating material between the front face and the rest of the unit.
But also
leave a note remembering to take all that stuff out before you start it up.
There are many hardware stores that that actually buy, have these kind of things with a string that you pull up really good and tight. And some of them are that way. Some of them have pressure-sensitive tape on it, like almost like a big Band-Aid. And you stick it on and it stays there. So there are things that people can do to save energy. And also it'll extend the longevity of that piece of equipment.
Is this also the time to clean them out?
Well, if you can pull it out, like it's difficult to take them out and put them in your bathtub. But if you're in a one or two family house, you take them in the backyard before it gets too cold, and you could wash it down with a hose and clean it out, and even use a little detergent is not bad, and just to clean it out, keep the bugs from accumulating inside.
And if you haven't already, get your heating equipment tuned up for the season coming up. You know, make sure that if it's an oil unit, to make sure the filters are changed, that the flue is clean, especially with oil. Maybe you need a flue cleaning to get it more efficient. Also on gas, to have the pilots adjusted. The other day I did a home inspection where every time I turned the heating equipment off, the pilot blew itself out.
Ooh.
So obviously there's an adjustment problem there, and that's not uncommon.
Yeah,
so
there's also you get a technician in there. He checks the things like the high pressure limit switch, the high temperature limit switch, all these switches that make this thing safe and work properly should be checked out by a technician.
Now we're getting a lot of calls already, so I want to get to them as soon as possible, but who's going to do the reading of the quiz this
week? I can do this. This is mine.
this is mine.
wait. Once, twice, three, shoot.
Name the impervious material and technique used to provide drainage control, moisture, or rainwater penetration through a building's roof, walls, interior doors, and windows.
Exterior doors. Yeah, okay. Name the impervious material and technique used to provide drainage control, moisture, or rainwater protection, penetration through a building's roof,
Actually, I think
walls,
you're right. I think it is protection.
Protection and penetration. You don't want them to go inside the building.
Through the roof, the walls, exterior doors, and windows. Okay, and our number here, 646-829-3985. My guests are the gurus of how-to, Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell, and I'm Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. Let's read the first person to actually contact us is Janet from Manhattan. She wants to know how to unclog a kitchen sink drain.
Unclogging a kitchen sink drain, depending upon how it's clogged, but generally underneath the sink, there's a little thing called the P-trap, which is meant to keep the sewer gases from coming into the building. But what that does, it also captures the gook and the debris that has to be cleaned out and snaked out.
So we shouldn't just use Drano?
Well, sometimes you try to get it out physically as best you can, but if you can't, then you go into some of these chemical cleaners that is like could be sulfuric acid, it could be hydrochloric acid. It's an acid which is you try to use them sparingly.
I've always wondered why they didn't put holes in the pipes since they're acids.
The acids don't seem if they do accelerate the oxidation of the iron piping, and sometimes they even sometimes deteriorate the copper or brass drainage systems that may be in the drainage system. But generally, they don't do that much damage. But they do could you do some damage if there is some sort of material that is like a caulking compound or something like that, or even the lamp wick that they use to keep the pipes together, that could deteriorate from that kind of caustic solution.
But also, the thing is that the first thing you want to try is maybe even putting a small snake down the drain and following that out. And you might be able to get most of the material out.
What kind of snake are we talking about? Just use an old hanger or a metal hanger?
Actually, I've used that, and sometimes you take the hanger, you turn the end back so it makes a hook, and you kind of push it through and you bring it back, and sometimes that'll get out the clump. Sometimes you need a snake, which you can buy in a hardware store, which is designed for kitchens or bathrooms. But often I find that a lot of blockages in bathrooms are from the stopper control arm that's below the stopper that makes the stopper go up and down. And if you pull the stopper out, all of a sudden there's a big clump of hair right there. And you say, wow, how easy was this? On the other hand, then it could be like my girlfriend's apartment where we took the whole sink apart and it turned out that the blockage was a foot or two below the sink. So with that one, we tried some of this Drano-type material, and then it cleared it right out.
But last but not least is the old reliable plunger, if you know how to use that plunger. Mm-hmm. The plunger doesn't work from pressing down on it. It works when you pick it up. In other words, you got to push it all the way down until it's the end, and then very vigorously jerk it up.
Because when you push it down, you're creating a vacuum.
When you're pushing it down, you're actually packing up the material that's clogging. But when you push it down very easily while it's in water, even put a little Vaseline on the bottom of it, squeeze it down, and then jerk it up, and that loosens up the material, and then it drains out. And by the way, if anybody wants to see how to do it, you can go to our website, and there is a diagram on just that process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take some calls.
Yes.
And our first caller is John from Paramus. Hi, John, you're on the air.
What's up, John?
Good. I want to buy a generator. I want to run my sump pump, one refrigerator, and a couple of lights. What size should I buy?
Well, here's the thing. The first thing, before we tell about size, and if it's just a refrigerator or a sump pump and a couple of lights, you could probably get away with a 1,500 to 2,000-watt generator. But the most important thing is, if you're going to have these things continue to be plugged into their house circuits, you have to put in a separate switch for your generated circuits. So, because what happens is, if you have your generator on and then the electricity comes on at the same time and everything's connected, your generator is going to burn out.
You're going to blow it.
If you're just going to run extension cords around the house or have a separate box put in that you can plug that right into, which would be the easiest way, especially if you're in one of these neighborhoods, like whether it's Connecticut or New Jersey, where you get a lot of power outages, I probably would have already done that by now. So I would say anywhere between 1,500 and 2,000 watts.
More than enough.
2,000 watts will do the work.
Is
there any way I could get one to run the heat?
Yeah, because what kind of heat do you have?
I have gas. I gas-powered baseboard.
Baseboard. So there's a circulator pump there, right?
Yeah, that's only a quarter.
Yeah, if you could get that wired in also, because again, the burner, you said it's gas?
Yeah.
Yeah, gas doesn't use a lot of electricity because that's
low
voltage transformer. And the circulator pump is maybe about an amp or so, not even. So, yeah, you could get that all wired through. So you could have your heating, you can have your refrigerator, and you can have some, you know, lighting here and there so you can actually, and maybe watch a TV so you're not sitting in the dark staring at the black wall.
But if those people out there that have electric heat, forget it.
Well, you could. You just got to get bigger and bigger.
Bigger, generator. Electric heat, or sometimes the forced air heating, it has that.
And I have to say,
air conditioning also is got a compressor on it. So you got to be careful.
And I have to say that if you're in one of those areas where outages is a regular thing, I mean, where I live in Staten Island, maybe we have an outage once a year and it's for a few seconds and it comes back on. But if I was in an area where I would have an outage for more than a few days, I would make the investment of putting in a regular generating system.
That's wired into the central system.
That self-test, some of them run on natural gas, and I would look into that because it's just a crime what's going on in a lot of these neighborhoods with these kinds of outage right now.
John, thank you so much for calling us. Nadine from Montclair, you're on the air.
Hey, Nadine.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I have several window unit air conditioners that seem to have gotten black mold in them after we had all that rain at the end of the summer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I want to know if it's something I can clean out, or should I just get rid of the air conditioners?
No, you can actually clean it out. And one of the best ways is there is a couple of moldicides either you can commercially buy that would not do a whole lot of damage to the equipment, or you can actually use a mixture of bleach, water, and soap. And actually, if you get one of these sprayers that you can put a bottle on the bottom and spray it out with that, you can get that all to be cleaned up just fine. The air conditioner itself is not really affected by the mold. It's basically just us.
Great.
So if you could just spray out all those areas. But the problem is that a lot of times these air conditioners are not pitched properly because there shouldn't be any mold in the air conditioner if it drains properly.
Okay.
So water is basically sitting in there. So when you definitely want to have the air conditioner pitched a little to the out, little downward on the outside, so you get that proper drainage.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And, of course, then it spills on the people who walk by your house, but that's a whole other matter.
but it's quite...
I was thinking, is it raining? Oh, no, there's an air conditioner.
But you could put a tube at that thing and then tie it to the building and let it drain down the side of the building.
And that happens all the time.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Marie on Facebook says, my kitchen sink has the single handle to control the temperature of the water. For some reason, it's either too hot or too cold. There's very little variable for mm-hmm. temperature differences. Is there a way to adjust that?
Yes, there is. Inside those kind of valves, the single lever valve, there are little controllers that have O-rings around them. And generally, those O-rings wear out or deteriorated for some reason or other. There's usually, you take whatever the manufacturer is, you can go to any hardware store and ask them for a rebuilding kit. And it tells you how to take apart the entire valve and fix it. And in fact, again, that type of diagram is in the book that is downloaded. You could download it from our website at www.accuratebuilding.com. And the whole diagram on how to fix that particular valve is right there for you.
But I also want to say that though I am a big advocate for single lever valves on tubs and showers, I'm not as big an advocate for single lever valves on kitchen sinks. I actually like the two separate valves because I think they work a little bit better. And a safety or scalding is not really a problem in the sink because your hands are actually more resilient to hot changes in temperature, and it's not all over your body. So from that point of view, I'm more into the single lever valves.
The
dual valves.
Actually, I have to replace mine. It leaks like a sieve.
Like a sieve.
Because dual valves, you also have a lot more subtle control over both sides.
Right. For that particular application, for the tubs and showers, stick with the single. They're safer.
Now, we are going to go to a little break, but a reminder that we have this quiz in effect, and not one person has ventured to come through with a possible answer. Larry, you want to read it one more time?
I think all the contractors and architects have taken the day off.
maybe they finally realized that they shouldn't be calling in and just leave this to the regular folks.
Name the impervious material and technique used to provide drainage control, moisture or rain, water, penetration control, I guess also, through a building's roof, wall, and exterior doors and windows.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be back with your calls to 646-829-3985. Your comments sent to our show page at WNYC.org. For the gurus of how to, Al and Larry Ubell, Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. Stay with us. And we're back with the Gurus of How To, Al and Larry Abell. We're taking your calls at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And Laura of the on the Upper West Side left a comment. She said, what do I need to do to clean my bathroom ceiling and air vent through which the contents of an upstairs tub flooded when a pipe failed? Do I use bleach? Do I use steam? Or does the ceiling need to be opened up to air out?
Well, what it needs to be cleaned out, and anything that you have to repair the whatever the leakage is, of course, before you even commence to control the fungus that's going to grow because of the moisture and everything else, and also the nutrients that are harboring in the cavity of the building. And then everything has to be removed, cleaned it out, and the mixture of chlorine, bleach, and liquid detergent and some water mixed together and spray it onto those areas will kill the fungal or bacterial growth, and then all that is damaged has to be repaired by a mechanic.
But you also have to determine whether the ceiling system is still wet, and that needs to be done by someone who has a moisture meter, so they can see how wet this plaster or drywall ceiling is.
There are moisture meters. How do you do that?
It's actually a very cool little toy. I have one of them. What you do is it basically is a device. It works two ways, but the most reliable way is it has two pins that stick out of the end of it, and you push the pins into whatever surface you're checking. And it reads, because there's an electrical charge between in the moisture that comes back. And you can see what the resistance level. If the resistance is very high, there's no moisture. If it's very low, it comes, you know, there's a lot of moisture content. And that's very important to determine that first before you move on, because like my father said, you know, you want to make sure that you don't have a mold growth situation inside the wall of all the leftover biological matter or nutrients that would work for good mold food.
Now, what happens if you just don't take care of it?
Well, what happens is the spores of the mold. The mold goes and it retracts back when it's all dried out. If it is dried out. But what happens if you don't clean it out? And the next time you're going to have a little bit of a leak, a tiny little bit of leak. You're going to have an abundance of mold.
And does it eat the wall? And does it affect our health?
Well, it can cause a rotting condition of any of the wood joists or wood framing or anything that has a nutrient value inside the cavity of the building. So the idea is to get rid of all of that stuff, and that goes with most of the buildings in the city of New York.
As far as the health issue is concerned, some people are horribly allergic to mold spores, you know, when they're in their dormant state and they're still allergic to them. And those people are affected. Most people are not. They say the majority of Americans or people on the planet are generally not affected by mold. And it depends on what species this is. So a lot of people are not affected by many of these species. That's why there's no standard for mold, because you have to have a consistency, and you can't have a standard for all 100 different types of mold spores.
So hundreds could be thousands.
You're right. It could be tons. let's just pick the winners. You know, the top 100, and then so there's that issue. But as far as getting back to our original question about cleaning out the ductwork, cleaning out the ceiling, cleaning out the vents, basically water, soap, and a little bit of bleach, and that will really do the job.
Now, the soap you're talking about would be like dish detergent.
Yeah, it could
the
be
soap, yeah.
Dish detergent, shampoo, any kind. The soap is actually an emulsifier, and what it does is it actually coats each of the spores, enabling them to be washed away.
And for the bleach to actually get inside of them.
And to kill them.
Bill from Brooklyn is on the air. Hi, Bill.
That's where we believe in death, about mold spores.
Yes.
That's where it ends.
Yeah, hi. I'm calling to ask, I have a room air conditioner. I have access to the outside. It's a second floor roof.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, I'm covering the inside with a plastic sheeting that use a hair dryer
Go on.
Do I need a vinyl cover, a padded vinyl cover on the outside? Is that advantageous or disadvantageous?
It's disadvantageous because then what you're doing is you're trapping the moisture inside the outside of the air conditioner, and it will tend to corrode out the different parts, cause oxidation. Where there are wires, the wires will not make good contacts anymore. So you want it's meant to be outside. Unless you're going to bring it in completely, just leave it alone. Like I was speaking about with the central air conditioning compressors, I just believe in putting something on top of them to keep the leaves out, but not to really make it weather tight. So you don't have to do that. The inside, very important. The outside, definitely don't.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome. And we go now to Arch from Norwalk, Connecticut. Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing?
You think you have the answer to the quiz?
We'll see.
Okay.
We'll be the judge of whether you have the right answer or not, won't we?
We have a person with attitude here.
Well, I'm sorry. My guess is damp proofing.
No.
But it was a nice question, a nice answer, right?
Yes, it was. Yes.
Okay. It's a good try.
Thank you so much.
Next.
A listener in Harlem writes, my apartment is too hot. I don't even turn on the radiators. The heat is from the pipes. I've even had to use the air conditioner in the middle of winter. Do you have any tips on other ways to cool down my apartment? This is the opposite of most people's problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
No. This is actually a very, very common problem in the city of New York. And it's funny, and in some large cities where we have steam heat, which is controlled by computer controlled equipment called sold under the name brand Heat Timer. And the way it works is that the heat is not necessarily controlled by the interior temperature, but by a system of computing of heat loss and how much heat you're going to put into the building. So a lot of these buildings get overheated. And I even at a convention, someone said, you know what a New York City thermostat is? And I said, what? And they said, a window. So they control the temperature by opening and closing the windows. And so one of the things that they can do is actually that all those heating pipes that are in your apartment, you can actually purchase insulation and insulate those pipes from giving off heat in the apartment.
Yeah, especially the bathrooms in a lot of houses where they have the riser going from one bathroom right through another. That pipe in the middle of the winter could be up to 212 degrees. It could be the temperature of boiling water. And that pipe itself is not only dangerous for children who would touch it, but it's also giving off a tremendous amount of heat by radiation alone.
So you can purchase insulation that's the size of the pipes and apply it to the pipes, and that will reduce the heat load in the apartment. Also, like you said, now the problem is when you keep the radiators off all the time, sometimes the radiators get water-bound and water starts popping out of the end. So it's not a bad idea that once a week or once every 2 weeks, you open that valve up for a few minutes, let the water drain out, and then close it back up again.
Let's take another call. This is from somebody who thinks she knows the answer to the quiz. Carol from Teaneck, New Jersey. Hi, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi, Carol.
What do you think? What do you think it is?
I wondered if the answer might be flashing.
How did you know that, Carol? I didn't.
Yay! Well, because I had my roof flashed. And the guy didn't do it right, and so I have leaking water into a wall.
Yeah, I know. I have to say that I had a roof put in my building a bunch of years ago, and my roofer, who said he was great at this, was horrible at it. And I ended up having to go on my own roof and actually removing the flashing he did and reinstall it myself.
So. See, I said flashing was something totally different. You got arrested when you you did some flashing on the baseball
field. That's from the old English word. This is from the German. Okay.
I knew he was going to do it.
A mile away.
The thing is about flashing, it is really a skill level that architects and engineers who are working on buildings, especially older buildings, really see what they did wrong in yesteryear in order to correct what is happening today. It is a very interesting technique, and it has to be employed meticulously.
And I have to say, most times when having a roof put in, especially a pitch roof, if you see black roofing cement, the guy doesn't know what he's doing.
That's
okay,
exactly.
Well, Carol wins some kind of a prize.
Yes, she gets a copy of recipes. Alubel, a saving guide for homeowners.
You've written too many books, Al.
No, I think it's actually Save Money, Save Energy.
Yes, I do,
by
too.
Alubel and George Merlis.
Absolutely.
But okay.
I'm going to put you on hold, Carol, and they'll take your address.
And you'll get something.
You're going to get one book or another, okay?
Or maybe a piece of coal. I don't know.
Thank you so much for calling us.
That's not a bad gift. Get a piece of coal with something written into it.
Yes.
Now,
in black.
Alyssa writes, Lois in West Milford, she says, how much insulation does wall-to-wall carpeting provide? I'd like to replace carpeting with area rugs over wood laminate, but I'm worried that the house will be a lot colder in the winter.
Well, it depends on what's below. If it's a crawl space or it's a unheated basement or it's even just a concrete slab, yes, you're going to feel a significant amount of cold. And I have to say, it's not just the carpet that adds the insulation. It's also the carpet padding.
The padding probably adds more than the carpet itself.
So, yes, it's going to be. So if you want to make it better, at least under the carpets, the area rugs, if you want them to last, put padding under those too. But is it significant? And the answer is no, because according to all the information I've seen, is that you only lose 10% of your heat loss through your floor. You lose the rest of the 90% through the walls and ceilings.
Yes, because another thing, it depends upon whether there's an apartment below you. If there's an apartment below there, nothing can happen. There's also another factor that people believe that the room gets cold. That if you have a concrete floor and you walk around on it barefoot, the concrete itself takes the heat out of your body when you touch it, and it seems like it's cold. But actually, the concrete floor is the exact same temperature as the rest of the room. It just has a greater absorption value than other kinds of materials.
Let's take a call from, who is it? Darius from Chestnut Ridge. Chestnut Ridge. Hi.
Darius?
Yes, that's right. Hi, how are you?
So, what can we do for you?
Actually, my question is very much related to the last one.
You on the air, Darius.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for working with us.
Good thinking.
Okay.
Three of my bedrooms are located over above unheated garage.
Yeah.
And especially hardwood floors get real cold during the winter, and I feel the temperature in the bedrooms are lower than in the rest of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the idea of treating the garage ceiling below the bedrooms as an outside wall and insulating it with the styrofoam and stucco as you would do with the outside wall. Is this advisable?
No. Because I have to say that, well, first of all, the ceiling should be insulated anyway. So you need to make a hole in the ceiling to see if they actually insulated it when they built the building in the first place. And so if they didn't insulate it with at least like an R19 or an R38.
But he can only do as much as the joist dimensions.
But you can fit in quite a bit. So you have to look in and see if they actually insulate it. If they didn't insulate it, then the one solution is actually removing the drywall from the ceiling and re-insulating. Or you could actually put in a rigid board insulation on the ceiling in that area and have that as your insulating level.
The other level is they can blow in insulation into the cavity joists.
Right, by just making holes.
They make a hole in one end and it goes right through to the other end and
that's true too, and
go back and forth until you fill up all of the cavity below that bedroom area.
Now, we have very little time, but I want to sneak Marcia in here, if Marcia's there.
I'm
Hi,
here.
Marcia.
Yeah, Marcia, what's up?
Thank you. My apartment is cold. It's 69 to 70 degrees, which is cold for me.
Okay.
And I have a built-in around my air conditioner and my radiator.
Yeah.
And the super says that the built-in is blocking the heat. But I have a friend who lives in a building nearby. It was built by the same people. The same people built in what I have, and she gets plenty of heat, and
Well, it could be
my kitchen, and in my kitchen, I have another radiator. I have nothing in front of it.
Marcia, we have very little time.
But here's the thing. It's probably that there's a problem with the circulation of heat through your particular radiator. Like you say, it's a built-in, which indicates to me it's probably a hot water system. So maybe there might be a problem with the zone valve there. Someone actually has to look at that device and see if they're getting the temperature of water through that radiator that you're getting in the rest of the building.
It could be also suffering, that radiator could be suffering from air embolism.
Well, you mean airbound.
Airbound.
Help people out. Yeah. You know, use the words that it's airbound, that there's air in the system.
Now, we are pretty much out of time, but we still have a lot of calls. People can reach you, Larry?
Right. They can email me at larry@ubell.com. Include your telephone number because I might end up calling you because it's easier. I don't expect me to get to everyone because I get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and I can't get to every one of them, but I try, and I try to get to the most, you know, at least the ones that are, you know, probably the ones that get to me first. That's usually the way it works.
Yeah, so. I try to get to the ones that look like it's some dangerous problem,
yeah.
And I focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because those are the people who have the most immediate problem. Otherwise, you can always call us again next month when the Gurus will be on our show on the 14th of December. And as always, I look forward to that. And at that time, I suspect you have some good advice until
we arrive.
I'm slowing down very slowly.
At that time, we'll show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.